Hello and welcome to the Sound of Economics podcast from Bruegel, the Brussels-based economic policy think tank. I'm Sean Gibson, Bruegel's press officer, and joining me for today's episode are three Bruegel scholars. Reinhilde Vergelers.
Hi.
Simone Tagliapietra.
Hello.
And Jay Scott Marcus.
Howdy.
Now, we're here to discuss the topic of new manufacturing in Europe, or Industry 4.0, as some people might know it. This is the central theme of the latest book in Bruegel's Blueprint series, pardon me. And Scott, Simone and Reinhilde have all contributed significant work to it. I hoped we could start with you, Reinhilde, the editor of the Blueprint, by discussing firstly what exactly constitutes new manufacturing and how does it differ from industrialization in Europe in the past?
Yeah, so what we looked at basically was the challenges that manufacturing sector will be facing in future. And it usually is associated with a positive view on new technologies that are enabling new manufacturing value chains. So that's usually also denoted as manufacturing 4.0, industry 4.0, where we'll be looking at particularly also the impact of new digital technologies, but also biotech and new materials. So it's mostly these opportunities for new technologies, but at the same time, of course, also looking at what the challenges are, and particularly also what that would imply in job creation, what kind of jobs do we need, and also the extent to which consumers can actually benefit from that also through what's going on in terms of market structure. So that's what we looked at, first of all, with a more chapeau chapter on what exactly these challenges and opportunities are, and then particularly also how Europe is positioned currently with the characteristics it has now. Is it well positioned or not to deal with these challenges in future or not? Within a global context here, also looking at the challenges from China, from the US. Overall, what we identified is that definitely Europe has a number of strengths that would allow it to really deal with those challenges and come up with a new Industry 4.0 that really would funnel EU growth here. But that still, there are also a lot of constraints that definitely need to be dealt with. And for that, actually, I think the individual chapters of the different or the different chapters in the blueprint also identify not just only the opportunities in each of these sectors, but definitely also the challenges in some of these sectors. So overall, I think the red line in the story is that, yes, there are opportunities, but Europe definitely needs to be aware and handle the different barriers it's facing, which mostly have to do with single market issues here, if it really wants to position itself at the forefront of Industry 4.0 on a global scale.
Yeah. Well, Simone, you focused your research on the, obviously, on the European energy sector. So how are more established companies dealing with the challenges of new manufacturing in that sector?
Yeah, thank you. Thank you very much. Basically, we start our chapter, first of all, by outlining the ones that we consider to be the key trends that are reshaping the energy industry today in Europe. And we clearly identified decarbonization policies on the one hand and digitalization on the other as the key factors reshaping the energy systems. On this basis, we analyzed how oil and gas companies on the one hand and how electricity utilities on the other hand are adapting to the new reality. As far as oil and gas companies are concerned, we see that some of them are betting on a quick decarbonization pathway. So they are already taking action, for example, in switching their portfolio more from oil to gas, being gas considered as a transition fuel towards a low-carbon future. Some of them are even investing substantially in renewable energy technologies, batteries, so new energy solutions. Others are more conservative and apparently less willing to take the risk of entering new market segments. In our view, policy signals such as sensible carbon pricing would be essential to really provide the direction for these companies to move forward in the future. The same applies to electricity utilities. In Europe, looking at the landscape of the companies we have around, we can clearly see some of them to be extremely dynamic, investing massively in renewables, but also in smart grids and in energy efficiency and all the kind of new areas that will make the electricity market not longer a commodity market, but really a service market. So many of these utilities are already seeing themselves not as commodity providers, just providers of electricity, but really as an integrated service provider to the consumer. So the electricity, but also energy efficiency solution, and why not also mobility, electric mobility solutions. This is clearly seen in a few European utilities, while others, again, are more conservative, and particularly in various countries, other utilities are betting a little bit on a slow pathway for decarbonization, and they are more investing into lobbying governments in, you know, having capacity mechanism to keep their coal and gas units on in order to preserve, as they claim, the stability of the system. In all this situation, we have also to take into consideration the fact that new players might well jump into the sector and be disruptive players vis-a-vis the established ones. So we can well expect new players such as clean energy service package providers to enter the system. Think about, for example, what happened with Tesla in the US, with this idea of providing to the consumer not only the car, but also the solar panel on top of the roof, the battery inside of the house, and the car as a whole unique package. So we can really also see these new players coming, and that will represent a major challenge for the established incumbents. From the policy perspective, as we said, policies will be key to drive this change, because investors need to be confident about the direction of decarbonization policies, notably, in order to make their long-term investment decisions. So in this framework, we consider that Europe really needs a structural rethink of its energy policy framework according to the ongoing structural transformation of the energy system. This is needed, so we don't need ad hoc interventions, single policy interventions. We need in Europe an holistic rethinking of how the digital energy system of the future will be, and accordingly we need a new sort of policy framework to enable the change in that direction.
Thank you, Simone. So we move to you, Scott. You've looked with your work more at e-commerce, dealing specifically with the intra-EU borders. How has e-commerce changed how those borders are approached, and what more could be done and changed to help e-commerce flourish?
Well, what you say is quite right, Sean. E-commerce, it's not exactly manufacturing, but it's clearly part of the same digitization story that we're all talking about here. And if you look at Europe generally, those borders are important. We represent a collection of member states, not a single continental federal entity, and it matters. If you look at Europe overall, we're not a leader in creating e-commerce technology, but we're doing quite well in using e-commerce, in employing it. It represented in 2015 already about 7% of all European retail sales. It's coming up, it's growing fast. Within countries, it's doing fine. Across countries, it's not doing nearly as well, and that's very clear in the statistics and the survey data. So for that reason, there's been a focus on trying to make things better in order to achieve the kind of scale economies across Europe that could potentially be achieved. And there are several dimensions to that. Many of these are problems that have been known for a long time. One has to do with cross-border parcel delivery prices. It costs much more to ship a package, a small package, let's say, from Germany to Belgium than it does to ship it from, say, Cologne, where I live, to Berlin, even though the distance to Belgium is less. And yet the differences are large, and they're clearly an impediment that's shown by the surveys both of consumers and of retailers, of shippers. So it's a factor. Value-added tax differences. The rates are different in each of the countries. Under current rules, the merchants have to know which value-added tax rate to apply and also which are discounted rates. So it all represents complexity for merchants, especially for small merchants, SMEs. Data transfer is also an issue. There are clear requirements for these e-commerce transactions. The GDPR helps. More work is needed. More work is ongoing. Cybersecurity is an issue across the board for big businesses and small, as we see every day. Yet another has to do with blocking or geo-blocking of both services and of goods. There's a directive that was just gotten through the legislative process that helps that, but it helps it for a relatively small fraction of the total so far. It deals with services, but not with copyrighted services. It deals with goods, but not with goods that require cross-border shipment. So there's more work that needs to be done. Genuinely hard problems, but still opportunities. So a lot has been done, a lot needs to be done. There was a very good study done by Dutch Brown and Martens at the Commission's Joint Research Center that found that if it were as easy to sell across border as it is to sell within a country, within a member state, prices should go down about 1% for online goods and about 0.5% for offline goods. And that represents a big gain in societal welfare, both consumer surplus and producer surplus. They both go up because the cost of making the sales is reduced. So it's an opportunity. It's an opportunity that we need to seize on.
Yeah. Reinildo, if we come back round to you for sort of to underline all of this, what do you think maybe Europe can do in the immediate sense, and maybe what can it learn from other parts of the world in dealing with these new manufacturing issues?
Yeah, I think the various examples clearly illustrate a more general problem that is addressed here. That's this transition phase that we need to deal with. It also goes beyond pure manufacturing, also includes service sectors too. And this transition will clearly have winners and losers, has to do with what creative destruction capacity do we actually have and how do we manage this. That means incumbent players, companies need to be able to adapt, new players need to come in, old players need to exit. So it's that whole creative destruction capacity here that we need to have well functioning if we're able to deal with that. What we see from the various contribution is that Europe can deal with it, but still with a lot of question marks. And particularly what we see is that it seems to be still restricted to some firms which are able to deal with these challenges, some countries and some sectors here. And there is a looming danger actually of an increasing divergence and inequality within Europe here, where some companies and some sectors are able to deal with this and others are not following up. And that's why I think from a policy perspective, that's definitely something we need to be able to address here. So this creative destruction capacity, this dynamic innovative power we need to have functioning and sufficiently general. And that's why also in terms of policy recommendations, what we draw from that is that we should really focus on a horizontal policy in trying to improve the framework conditions in Europe for having that dynamic capacity for countries, sectors and firms to adjust here, not to focus too much particularly on certain technologies or certain firms here, because it's really very important that we have the whole system adapting to that here. So that's why we definitely emphasize horizontal industrial policy with industrial, not just only to classic manufacturing, but in general.
Great, thank you. That brings us to the end of the podcast. Thanks for listening to The Sound of Economics, and thanks to all our guests here today. The book we've discussed is called Remaking Europe, The New Manufacturing as an Engine for Growth. It's available on our website, either to read online, or if you want to order a paper copy, just go to www.economics.com. bruegel.org, or click on the displayed link wherever you're listening to this podcast to go directly to the correct page. I hope you'll join us again for The Sound of Economics. Until next time, bye-bye.